Welcome to the Premier Academy 360 podcast, brought to you by VSP Global. We'll bring you regular topical insights and advice from your peers and subject matter experts. Here's your host, Jim Castor, Vice President of VSP Provider Relations.
Hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time zone you may be listening to us from. Thank you for joining the Premier Academy 360 podcast. Today's episode is going to explore telemedicine and how one of your peers has been using it during the pandemic. We're also going to get into a discussion around plans for its use during the reopening phase, and also she'll talk a bit about the role she sees it playing in her practice in the future. Joining me today to talk about this is Dr. Mary Ann Murphy. She is the vice chair of the VSP Global Board and is the owner of a multidisciplinary OD-MD private practice near Boulder, Colorado, where she's been practicing for 18 years. She's also an active member of the Colorado Optometric Association and the AOA. So on that note, Dr. Murphy, would you tell us a little more about you and your practice and how you're doing with all of this craziness with the pandemic?
Oh, Jim, that's kind of a loaded question, isn't it? Like most of my peers, I don't know if I've really quite figured out exactly how I'm doing during this, but and also kind of watching how my practice has evolved. So as you described, kind of pre-COVID, my practice was a 5-OD, and we have 2 to 3 visiting MDs at any given time in our group practice, about 20-plus employees. And now it looks very different. Everyone is still on the payroll, but at any given time, we only have 2 doctors in the office and probably give or take 10 staff. So, you know, it's been a challenge to figure out who should be there based on patient volume, based on employee risk, based on social distancing, based on seniority, all sorts of things. So I think to ask how I'm doing, I'd say I'm a little bit frazzled, but I share in the comfort of my peers who are equally as frazzled and, you know, just trying to get through this day by day, hour by hour.
Yeah, thank you for that. Certainly, it is a trying time for, you know, the world in general, and certainly healthcare providers across the board. This is just an unprecedented moment in history. You know, the topic today, of course, is around telemedicine. And, you know, it's interesting. We continue to see news about how telemedicine is accelerating in different parts of the economy. And with this pandemic and the need for social distancing and so forth, it seems to be an even hotter trend. But I want to kind of start off this conversation with a little bit of information about what you may or may not have been doing with telemedicine prior to COVID-19. Were you involved in that? What did that look like?
Yeah, I think if we look at kind of really the global definition of telemedicine, which is really doctors interacting with their patients in some form or function outside of the office, right? So whether it was through text, through email, through the patient portal, through the telephone, and then obviously the more sophisticated audiovisual kind of two-way communication, I would say I was doing some of it. I was definitely emailing patients. I was definitely using our patient portal. I was definitely calling patients. But, you know, being in a smaller community and having been here for nearly 20 years, I was definitely texting my patients. And I think we all were doing some form of that, you know, where a friend would send you a picture of a red eye of their child and ask for some treatment if it was over the weekend. So, you know, it's very basic level. Yes, I was doing telemedicine. I think when I think about or know about what telemedicine is now, in its truest sense, I think a lot of eye care providers, both optometrists and ophthalmologists, have really kind of turned their nose to telemedicine, feeling like I need a slit lamp. I need, you know, my indirect to evaluate the fundus. I need to be able to check a pressure. And so logistics has made it impossible to do those things. And I think now with new criteria around what telemedicine is and really having a patient population that needs access to doctors outside of the office, we've been able to kind of reevaluate our willingness to perform it in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense. I'm wondering, do you think back to maybe the first couple of instances when you somehow got involved with telemedicine, some of the examples you brought up, what was the thing that triggered you to start thinking, maybe I should start looking into this more and maybe embracing it in a different way than I was before?
Yeah, I think a lot of it really happened in those initial days after we got the shelter at home order, which in Colorado was around March 17th. And we definitely have some high risk patients. And we had some high risk staff, and it didn't feel appropriate for me to force my doctors to come into the office to see patients. Our governor was telling us to stay home. And so it was a way to reach out to those high risk patients who were calling in with concerns. And so, you know, to be able to see them over video, I think it offered comfort on two levels. One was they saw my face and I saw theirs. And it is that doctor-patient relationship that we've valued for so long, that we've wanted to preserve, that when we see each other, we're instantly comfortable and can feel very comfortable kind of talking through what's going on. So rather than someone just sending me a red eye, I can ask them questions. I can say, well, what did you get in your eye? And I notice your hair color is different. Have you been using hair dye? All sorts of things that you can see over video that you can't get just over the phone. But more importantly, on top of that, I think it gave the patient a great deal of comfort. So they can obviously see my face when we're on telemedicine. So if they see my reaction when they first get on the camera to their bright red eye, and I say, oh my goodness, this is more serious than I thought. I really need you to come to the office. We've got some other things we need to be looking into. I think at that point, their understanding of how serious the condition is made them feel a little bit more comfortable about coming in. I also had the opportunity to tell them how we were social distancing in the office and how we were sanitizing in the office, but they just knew that, hey, this probably shouldn't go to the emergency room, and hey, this probably can't wait, whoever, you know, who knows how long we're going to be in this situation before it gets addressed by a doctor. So, you know, I think probably 80% of what I did over telemedicine, I was able to just do over telemedicine and initiate treatment. But the other 20% that I did have to bring into the office that warranted an office visit definitely felt more comfortable coming in.
Yeah, makes total sense. Yeah, thank you for that. You know, it brings to mind for me, one of the things we just wrapped up in the last week is a new survey. We over the last several weeks have interviewed talked with or surveyed thousands of doctors across the country about some of their challenges. And we're really hearing three themes from them. One is around how to bring patients back safely in this environment. How do you assure patients that the environment is clean and safe? And how do you schedule them into your calendar? So I wonder, from your perspective now, having had some experience with telemedicine, do you see this type of technology being able to address some of those trends? And if so, comment a little bit about how you see that addressing these three areas.
Sure, Jim. I think it's been kind of interesting because Colorado did reopen about a week and a half ago. And so as excited as I was to literally get my hands on patients and see people face to face, I think two things came up as we started to schedule patients back. And that was, one, we obviously have a limited number of patients in the office at any given time to maintain social distancing and to reduce the risk of both patients and staff. So I'm only seeing about 70% of the patient volume that I normally see. And on top of that, we only have, like I said, one or two doctors in the office instead of three. So already it's a decreased patient load. And I feel like in order to maintain profitability and have money coming in the door, I have a certain patient volume that I need to maintain. So because I'm only seeing patients, say, every 30 minutes instead of every 20 minutes, what that does is it allows the staff to clean. So to address one of the other questions, the staff is definitely spending a ton of time cleaning, and we've got signage all throughout the office that indicates what areas have been cleaned. So it's very visible to our patients. But also, that's the staff cleaning and me with some downtime. So that was a perfect opportunity to kind of squeeze in some telemedicine visits. We didn't have them kind of on the schedule ready to go initially, but patients would call in and I said, gosh, now our schedule's booked out for 2 months because we're so backed up, but squeeze them into this spot and I'll see them over video and squeeze them into this spot. And now it's become just a fixed place in our schedule. And then in addition to that, one of the, I would say, unpredicted, or I didn't predict this when I was doing telemedicine during the pandemic, was that the patients that I saw during the COVID crisis, when our office was closed over video, have called back. And the natural inclination of my staff says, oh, hey, if that's still bothering you, why don't you come in? And their request has been, isn't there a way she can just see me over video again? Because it worked so well the first time. So right. I think it does demonstrate that, and this has been well established. I think there was a Harris poll in 2015, and then another poll in 2017, and then a repeated poll in 2019 that shows, you know, more than 65% of consumers are willing to do their medical visits over telemedicine if technologically appropriate. And so in those same studies, they echoed that they felt it was kind of the doctors that were lagging in their willingness and their ability to do it. And I have definitely seen that shine through that, you know, VSP members, our patients want the opportunity to access us via telemedicine when it's appropriate.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Thanks for that. So I know in your answer, you were alluding to some of the things that you've done to modify the practice. Now that things are starting to reopen, I wonder if you could walk the audience through a little bit of what you've done to modify your workflow and the environment.
Sure. I think some of the simplest things we've done, and forgive me, these aren't my ideas. I think one of the greatest things about our profession is the cohesiveness of our peers and everyone who's come together, whether it's through social media or other chat boards or through avenues like the VSP newsletters to kind of gather ideas from everybody and then bring them together so that we can all share them. So I don't think any single one of these are my ideas, but what we're doing right now is when patients arrive at the office, well, I should back up. Prior to patients arriving at the office, the day before, we are sending them an email that describes to them what the process will look like and that it does look different than it has previously. So they're well aware. We advise them to wear a mask. We advise them to come alone to their appointment unless they're a minor or they're accompanying an elderly patient. But we tell them when they get to the office to text us. And we had text in place before, but we've definitely ramped up our capabilities there with one of our providers, Weave. And the patients will text us when they get to the office. They will communicate with our front desk staff who will ensure that they have all of their insurance cards, all of their personal demographics updated. And this is all done over text. They can send pictures of their own cards. We don't have to touch anything. We advise them what their copays are. And then after that, a technician will actually either get on the phone with them and or try to engage them in telemedicine if they want two-way video. Oftentimes, we're finding it's easier just to do that part over the phone. The technician will call them, get their chief complaint, make sure all their patient history is updated. Most of them have been given access to their portal ahead of time. I would acknowledge that prior to this COVID pandemic, we were using our portal occasionally, and now we can't imagine life without it. You know, so we send them a link the day before that helps them update their medical history, their medications, all those sorts of things, their family history, and then the technician just confirms that with them. At the same time, reviewing their chart to see what other auxiliary testing is needed, whether they're a contact lens wearer, so that by the time they come into the office, we ask them, put your mask on, meet us at the front door. We escort them directly back into the clinic. So there's no waiting in the what we call our welcome area. There's no kind of milling around in the optical pre-exam. And then they come in, they go directly to the pre-testing area. Everything is already sanitized. The patient goes through that area and directly into an exam room. And then at the completion of the exam, we offer the patient the opportunity to review the findings with the doctor then, or if there's some special testing that needs to be reviewed, patient wants to minimize their risk and leave the office. Sometimes we'll do that over telemedicine as well. But then obviously by appointment in the optical. And I would acknowledge that the optical has probably been one of our biggest challenge, not so much having appointments, but you know, people who want to see what they look like in glasses and take their mask off. And everyone likes to touch every pair of glasses and everything has to then be sanitized, which means it comes off the boards and it takes several minutes before we can get it back on the board for the next patient. So we're working through that consistently. You know, we'd like to have three opticians, but social distancing with three opticians and each of them with one patient doesn't always work. So continuing to work through challenges there, but then everything else is contactless. As, you know, we tell them, we'll get your order together. We'll send you a text. All the payment is done by via an email link and they can pay online. So efficiencies that we've built in that have been surprisingly accepted easily by our patients and desirable by our staff to limit the patient contact. Things that have come up out of this crisis, which I think going forward will just become a way of life. I think of it a lot. I had a Zeiss friend tell me that, you know, TSA kind of came out of the whole 9/11 catastrophe, and now it's just what we know, and it's an accepted way of life. And I think there's going to be a lot of things that come from this COVID crisis that will go forward being just part of the way we do things.
Wow, that's a lot. A lot of change in a very compressed short time frame, for sure. I'm wondering, you know, as we consider and kind of go back to the conversation about telemedicine, You know, what would you say to a doctor that is, you know, considering incorporating this into their practice? What types of things, what questions should the doctor be asking themselves? How do they evaluate what platform they work from and those kinds of things? What suggestions might you have?
Sure. I think, so to address the doctors who are considering it, I think that's a huge step forward just to begin with. So I would say go for it. And we can talk about some of the other considerations, but more to the doctors who kind of aren't even considering it. I would want to spend my time addressing those doctors because I think it speaks to the same doctors who for a long time said, I don't want to have weekend hours, or I don't want to have evening hours, or I don't want to have online scheduling, or I don't want to use electronic health records. I think at some point, maybe with the exception of the last one, it speaks to how we're willing to modify and adapt our practices to meet consumer needs. And to say that you're not even entertaining telemedicine needs to be an acknowledgement that you are willing to say that there are a certain portion of patients' needs that you are unwilling to meet. And you should be fair to refer them to your peers who are doing that. I agree with you. I don't have Sunday hours. If somebody wants Sunday hours, I have a peer that I send them to that I know offers Sunday hours. So if you're not going to offer telemedicine, I think there's lots of your peers that are doing it, and it's fair to let consumers know who those people are. But then to the peers that I have that are considering it, I think a couple of things. You just have to jump right in. You can practice. I mean, do a telemedicine visit with your parents. Do a telemedicine visit with one of your associates who's still at home. Play with the system, understand the system, create step-by-step instructions. It doesn't have to be cost prohibitive. When I started doing it, I was using the DoxyMeet platform. It's HIPAA compliant. There's an element of it that's free. And I thought, I don't know if I really want to get, you know, overboard into monthly fees. I don't know how much I'm going to be doing this, not only now, but then definitely going forward. So I don't want to commit by contract to something that's going to, you know, cause me to be strapped for a year. So there are free platforms out there. And right now, because of a waiver that CMS has put through, they're even allowing non-HIPAA compliant platforms to be used. So something as simple as FaceTime or Skype can be used for telemedicine. So if there's any question about how useful it can be, dabble in it. Start with some of those free platforms. There are through Affinity EHR, they have a telemedicine platform. But if not, just simple charting with your, you know, you can type your findings into your computer. You can paper chart them and scan them in if you want, if you're not using electronic health records. But just dabble in it. And I think when, like most things in our practice, when we brought in an OCT, I was like, do we really need it? And then when you see how much you use it and how patients are receptive to it, you understand the need for it in your practice. And I think telemedicine is exactly that. As soon as you have it and you see the patient response and you see how easily it can fit into your practice and how easy it is to do, it really is a no-brainer. I think we'd be hard-pressed to find any one of our peers who hasn't had a Zoom meeting or a Microsoft Teams meeting or a Google Meet or a house party or a Skype or something over this period of time that we've been at home. And it's frankly as simple as that.
Yeah, thank you for that. Appreciate it. One other area just to kind of explore a little bit is we've heard from some doctors that are testing out telemedicine options that in some cases, patients aren't always fully prepared for what that experience is like. They may not necessarily know what to expect when they're getting ready to have the exam and all the rest of that. How have you been preparing patients for a telemedicine experience?
Great question, Jim. And I think for us, it is exactly like a regular in-office visit. Now, when I say exactly, it doesn't mean we send them the same email, but we do have an email prepared for our patients that tells them about what to expect in a telemedicine visit. And I think that we had a while back shared that through one of the Premier Academy newsletters, and we can make that available again. But basically it says, it gives the patient information about what information is required before we do it, including information about both their vision plan and their medical plan insurance, because these visits are billable. It does give them a link to check their visual acuity, and there are tons of platforms out there for that. I know there's iCare Live, which actually has a visual acuity system built into the platform, but outside of that, many of the universities have put out apps or websites where people can go to check their visual acuity, and it gives detailed instructions about how to do that. It does talk about some of the limitations of telemedicine and that initially this telemedicine visit will be used to effectively triage the patient to determine if we can, in fact, complete a diagnosis and treatment. by way of telemedicine or if it will require an in-office visit. It does tell the patient that we expect them to follow the treatment that we're giving them and that we'll send them documentation afterwards. But like I said, most importantly, it does acknowledge when they click a certain button and they go into this telemedicine platform that it is a billable visit. And we make a note on there that this visit, while the patient is ultimately financially responsible, this visit may be billed to a coordination of their medical and their vision plan benefits if applicable. And that's been really one of the great things, I would say. I have to thank both our state associations and VSP for kind of stepping up. I think, you know, our state associations have stepped up in terms of getting optometrists included in telemedicine capabilities that are covered by commercial payers, Medicaid and Medicare. And we owe that to the AOA and our state associations for that. And then on top of that, VSP really stepped up by expanding their primary eye care that has some telemedicine reimbursements as well. And so those benefits can be coordinated to really make it almost zero out of pocket for many patients.
That's great. Well, thank you for that. So we're coming to a close here. And as we wrap up, do you have any other important considerations, best practices, tips, anything that we haven't really covered as we consider this telemedicine topic for practices at this point?
The only thing I would add, Jim, would be that the coding and the documentation for telemedicine, the criteria are very specific. I know that Fresnel from VSP early on in the pandemic put out a webinar about that, but there are an abundance, given the interest in telemedicine, there are abundance of telemedicine webinars out there with specifics about how to code, what to document, what to be careful to do, what to make sure not to do, how to get patient consent. And I would really encourage my peers to explore some of those. It takes probably 2 hours to listen to several of them to really get the information that you need under your belt to get started. But the bottom line is bite the bullet, do it. Our patients want it. It's safer for both us and for our staff in terms of reducing risk. And our partners in the industry are out there finding ways to make it easier for us as well.
Great. Well, those are great ideas. And I have to say, this entire conversation has been fascinating and full of great ideas for the future for a whole variety of reasons. Well, Dr. Murphy, want to say thank you for your time and insights. It was a pleasure having you join us today. And to the audience, we hope this provides you with some ideas to think about for your practice as you reopen and also move forward during this particularly difficult time. Thank you for joining us today for the Premier Academy 360 podcast. I'm Jim Castor. Stay safe, everyone.
This has been the Premier Academy 360 podcast, brought to you by VSP Global. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to check out podcasts.vspproviderhub.com for a comprehensive collection of business building training and education tailored to VSP network doctors and staff. This premier program benefit is currently available to all network practices. Visit podcasts.vspproviderhub.com to learn more.